Good morning. Picture the scene, a beautiful balmy evening, and after a heavy day dealing with affairs of state in Dáil Éireann, you decide to slip into a pub for a quiet pint with a few colleagues, when suddenly you become the focus of anti-austerity protesters who shout at you and jostle you. This is exactly what happened to Communications Minister Pat Rabbit on Wednesday, as he told Pat Kenny.
Sunny evening, early evening in Dublin City. You can even have a pint out of doors.
Wrong place, wrong time, Pat. These things happen. We had, as the record shows, a very long day here yesterday. And when the business of the Dáil moved to private members' business at 7:30, myself and a few colleagues got out of here. And there was a vote at 9:00. But I'm afraid around 8:00, we had an uninvited greeting party. And I had to come back here.
You were outside Doheny's and Nesbitt's because it's that kind of evening. You could have a pint.
It was a fantastic evening. I mean, it really is the most exceptional weather. You never got weather like this under Fianna Fáil.
Anyway, you were having your pint and then someone espied you.
Yeah, it was a protest by, it would appear, the Éirigí Republican dissident group, or certainly they were the leaders of it in any event. You know, one of them bought a pint and hung around for a few minutes. Some of my colleagues said we were being audio recorded, and he directed by telephone that they move the protest from Leinster House to the pub. And I slipped inside when I became aware that was happening, but 40 or 50 of them followed me in, and the rest, as they say, is apparently on video.
Yeah. It was sort of a flash mob that this guy who spotted you having a pint outside Doheny's and Nesbitt's obviously got on the phone and said, lads, we have a minister kind of available to us.
Yeah, the funny thing was he missed the real focus of his protest, which was the Troika were upstairs with Brendan Howland and Michael Noonan and so on. It might have had an interesting impact on them if they saw some of the stuff that we have to put up with for implementing their prescription. But there you are. That's the way it goes.
Minister Pat Rabbit. Strange times, too, in Shannadarran as the Upper House debated the abortion bill with some very graphic and unruly contributions. And while last week we were treated to Lapgate in the Dáil Chamber, this week we heard sexist infantile screechings as senators debated the holding of a referendum to abolish themselves. David Norris caused uproar. The object of his ire was Fine Gael TD Regina Doherty, who just issued a statement supporting the abolition of the Shannad.
I have just seen this malignant and mendacious piece of crime.
Senator,
no, I want to make
Senator,
one more
of order. Completely.
I think
resume
the Shannad Éireann should immediately
Senator,
put
seat.
Out a press statement
Senator.
Here.
And, Senator, resume
on
your
a
seat.
Unanimous basis.
Senator.
Because this is tissue of lies. And the idea that somebody like our
Senator. Time of the other senators here who have indicated to speak, and you've spoken already.
Yeah, but we should
Senator
have a revolution in this bloody place.
Senator Healy,
we should take over. The members should take over.
Fine Gael TD Mary Mitchell O'Connor objected strongly to Senator Norris's use of the word fanny and to his reference to Regina Doherty as the Regina monologues.
His contribution was crude, it was offensive, and it was deeply inappropriate. And I found it, as a woman, really misogynist. It shouldn't have been said. And I have great respect for Senator Norris, but yesterday was a new low, and he really has to withdraw that comment. I really believe that he has to apologise.
I don't think it's even one of the words that the Ceann Comhairle has on the list
of unacceptable
words. We have brat, buffoon, chancer, communist, corner boy, coward, fascist, fatty, gurrier, guttersnipe, hypocrite, rat, scumbag, scurrilous speaker or Yahoo. You can't insinuate that a TD or a senator is lying or drunk and a few other things, but there's no sign of this word.
This language was used in our national parliament, in our upper house. It's just not acceptable. And I go in there in the mornings at, you know, for leaders' questions, and I see children looking down, you know, on school tours, looking down on the workings of the chamber. And quite honestly, you'd be embarrassed. And again, I'd say to you, what message are we giving to our young people? Anyone that has daughters kind of educating them and listening to this kind of stuff in the Dáil and in the Shannad, they're disgusted. People are disgusted, and they're disgusted even with the debates, the shouting, the roaring, the score pointing. And sometimes, you know, it's not even prepared. It's people talking off the top of their
Be careful.
Whatever the word is. I haven't as scripted, but
the top of their manhood.
No, I certainly wouldn't. Well, I would never use that kind of language.
But as the song goes, sorry does seem to be the hardest word.
I would like to say that I accept that my language was intemperate. Had I been called for an explanation at the time, I would have given one. I don't intend to go into a lengthy linguistic explanation and try to defend what I said, which I could if it was an academic discussion. I regret any offence, but I'd like to say this. The thing I regret most is this is going to be used in this dirty campaign as a diversion.
But leave it to Mary Louise O'Donnell, herself a senator, to top any story.
There's a great story told about Chloe Gibson when she worked here. And she was a marvellous drama producer and the first of her kind. And she used to smoke and smoke and smoke and drive along in a little car. But one day anyway, she was smoking and the cigarette fell down onto her lap and further. And she stopped in the middle of the traffic. And this policeman came along and he said, "What are you doing? Stopped in the middle of the traffic." And she said, "Oh, officer," she said, "how could I proceed when my fanny was on fire?"
Mary Louise admitted to Pat Kenny that she'd a bit of a bottom problem herself, having taken to the roads of Inishkeen on a High Nelly bicycle to find the mystical in the mundane in Patrick Kavanagh's stony grey soil of Monaghan.
The first place we went to was Lennon's Farm. Now, in Lennon's Farm, there was a reading from The Green Fool where it was about the wedding, getting buckled, as Kavanagh said. And we all stood around in the sun, the beaming sun. And there was an old radio and a sewing machine and horse tackle and, you know, pitchforks outside. And this reading was done by the Lennon brothers. And I met Bridie Meekin, and she was beautifully dressed, 83, sitting on a seat. And I said, "Did you know Kavanagh?" And she said, "My father used to say, I saw Kavanagh laying in the drill, reading a book, and the horses stand idle in the fields." So on we went anyway, and to the melodeon player Owen Joe McGahan, and he played the melodeon outside at the turn to Kavanagh's house, and then on to the GAA field where Kavanagh started writing ballads about football. And it was there in the GAA pitch we also met the wonderful Tommy McCardle, who recited Spraying the Potatoes.
Well, he's on the line. Tommy, you're going to give us a couple of verses from Spraying the Potatoes, but do you want to give us context?
Well, it's just that it's a poem that in a way he wrote from memory. He wrote it in Dublin, and it was one of the first things he wrote in Dublin when he left Inishkeen, left the farm. And it has sort of a veil of memory over it, rather than being the direct experience which he would have been recording up to then. You know, so it's a very interesting poem, very formative poem in his life in a way, in that he was now, before that, everything in rural and everything to do with farming had to be in some way, almost in his poetry, related to God or to a divinity of some kind. But now he's beginning to see the thing itself in a way that he couldn't probably see it when he was in Inishkeen himself, you know. I'll just take the first four verses of it. This is where he more or less describes the process, you know. "The barrels of blue potato spray stood on a headland of July, beside an orchard wall where roses were young girls hanging from the sky. The flocks of green potato stalks were blossom spread for sudden flight. The Cares pinks in a frivolous blue, the Arran banners wearing white. And over that potato field, a lazy veil of woven sun, dandelions growing on headlands, showing their unloved hearts to everyone. And I was there with the knapsack sprayer on the barrel's edge poised. A wasp was floating dead on a sunken briar leaf over a copper-poisoned ocean."
Wow.
That's
sort of the description of it.
It's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
The wonderful Tommy McArdle with Mary Louise O'Donnell and Pat Kenny. I wonder, did Paddy Kavanagh pay any heed to the Tidy Towns competition? It's been on the go since 1958, with thousands of people across the country getting into the spirit of things with paintbrushes and garden trowels and wheelbarrow loads of lobelia. In an exclusive for Countrywide last week, Diarmaid McIntyre went out with an undercover inspector from the Tidy Towns competition. Obviously, I can't reveal his name, to find out what exactly impresses the judges.
Are we looking for hanging baskets? Is that mainly is that our brief?
If we see them, we should comment on their suitability, on their quality, on their maintenance. Yes, certainly we should. Are they important? No. They certainly prettify a place, but the competition has an image of being about litter and hanging baskets. Some of that is media fueled, because if you ever see any footage on TV of coverage of Tidy Towns winners, you know, you won't be able to move for the flowers. But, I mean, they have their place. I mean, there are great things to be said for nice floral displays, but is it crucial? No.
So now you know, tidy towns adjudicators do all their work in secret, and participating towns and villages aren't given the heads up when a judge is in their midst. Clearly, this arrangement requires some ingenuity on the part of the adjudicators themselves.
So what disguises do you use?
The bicycle is the best one, the little backpack, and you look like a little cyclotourist.
But I presume you go to some towns where there's never been a tourist. And they're very excited to see you.
Occasionally it has happened where you've arrived and yes, there's no disguising who you are. And sometimes a little flurry of activity, often lit up by high-vis jackets, breaks out. And it is, yeah, and, you know, it's fantastic to see. And you know, and again, that actually helps win you over because you can see how much this means, you know.
Unblock the Ramach A, the clandestine world of the Tidy Towns Inspector, heard on Countrywide last week. Well, Paddy Maloney of the Chieftains was in flying good form when the group came into Miriam O'Callaghan's studio on Tuesday to celebrate his 75th birthday. Paddy was congratulated by friends from around the world, among them Ry Cooder. He'd collaborated with the Chieftains on their San Patricio album about a group of Irish soldiers in the American Army in 1846 who deserted rather than kill the Mexicans they were fighting.
No, this was quite a project for Paddy and all the rest of us. It was as though he single-handedly took on the U.S. Army, and that's sacred over here, you know, in the United States. The Army is like high church, you know. You don't mess with them. And Paddy did. He stood up to him and told the story in a true way, in a beautiful way, in a musical way, but not masking anything, not hiding anything. And there were people who took offense, you know, you're not supposed to say this. And of course, the Mexican War is a crazy chapter in our history. It's always been amazing to me that minutes after California was declared territory of the United States, they discovered gold. Oh, gold. Amazing.
Coincidence.
Didn't know it was there, you know.
Yeah.
And you wrote that beautiful song, Roy.
Sounds of Mexico.
Yeah, beautiful.
That came out well.
Ry Cooder with Paddy Maloney. Yes, there were lots of anecdotes and some fine music. Chieftains celebrating Paddy Maloney's big birthday. Well, across South Africa on Thursday, from Khayelitsha to Guguletto to Kunu to Soweto, school children sang happy birthday to Madiba, father of the nation, their Tata, who is celebrating his 95th birthday. And it was all the more poignant because of his poor health.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Tata.
from the News at One on Thursday. In his day, Nelson Mandela, of course, spoke out powerfully about the scourge of HIV/AIDS. And in the first programme in her new series, Evie Nihuluan spoke with Rory O'Neill, a.k.a. Panty, Dublin's drag doyen. Rory was diagnosed with HIV in 1995. He's from Ballinrobe in County Mayo, and he described the confusion he felt dealing with his sexuality in a remote rural village in the 80s.
It seems so weird to say it now, but even then, in the 80s, early 80s, you know, we didn't really know what gay was. I mean, I think kids now have no understanding of that because they have the internet and, you know, Graham Norton's on the TV. You know, they know so much about the world and about those, you know, sexuality and those kind of things. We really didn't know those things. So I didn't really know what gay was. The idea that I might be gay wasn't something I could grasp or understand. But I definitely felt that there was something different about me. I just mightn't have been able to put my finger on exactly what that was.
Rory is living with HIV for the past 18 years, and he's critical of the stigma and intolerance that still surrounds HIV, in particular when it emanates from within the gay community itself.
There was a huge stigma attached to HIV.
Massive. There still is. I mean, even in places that you think shouldn't be, like in the gay community, where people should be so, you know, knowledgeable, really, especially with younger gays, because they haven't grown up with all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a real stigma about it and sort of a shaming about it. I mean, I have to sort of stop looking online sometimes at these forums and things because of the things that, you know, even, you know, I can take it when some crazy nut, religious, you know, nut or something says awful things about gay people and about HIV and all that. I can take that. It's water off a duck's back. Who cares? But it is upsetting and depressing when you see gay people saying it about other gay people.
But I was surprised to read recently that the figures of people who are being diagnosed mm-hmm. with HIV are actually increasing in Ireland.
Yeah, they are. And I think that's, I think that's two reasons. One is sort of complacency, because now it is seen as sort of a chronic, manageable condition that you don't have all of those education campaigns. And, you know, there aren't those ads on the TV and all that. Young people have never known anybody who died of AIDS. They're much more complacent. But I think a lot of it is to do with the stigma around it, because if everybody who is HIV positive was open about the fact that they are, it's a very difficult thing to do. And I'm not saying that, I'm not blaming anybody for not being that, because there's a lot of stigma and it's a very difficult thing to have to tell someone or be open about. But if everyone who was open about it, everyone's attitude would change overnight, because you all know people who are HIV positive.
Mm-hmm.
And so all these young gay guys, they think it is not even in their life. They think it's this weird thing that older gays used to have to worry about. That's how they sort of view it. Whereas if they went along to the clinic one day, they'd see so many people their own age and people that they know probably. But because people feel they have to keep quiet about it because of this stigma. So if people stop blaming people for it, the situation would be much better.
Rory O'Neill, a.k.a. Panty, heard on Evine and Company last Sunday from the production stable of Eileen Heron and Ger Philpott. Well, as Mayo natives, no doubt Evine and Panty will be glued to the match tomorrow when London takes on Mayo in the Connacht final at McHale Park in Castlebar. The London team is mostly made up of GAA players who are based in London for economic reasons. Well, Marty Morrissey travelled to the grounds in Ruislip, where he met the team during a training session, including Mayo man Tony Gohan, who'll take on his fellow county men tomorrow, and also manager Paul Coggins, one of the so-called exiles.
Tell me a little bit about yourself, because you're here quite a while now, aren't you, Paul?
I am, yeah. Some of them boys would want me to be going, I'd say, if they had a choice. But I'm here quite a while.
How long?
Since 1988.
And why did you leave Ireland and come to London?
Well, a couple of reasons, I suppose. I just wanted to try and see if I could better myself at the time in Ireland in 1988. Just wasn't probably as good as I would have liked. I was a young fella, I suppose, and most of my mates were over here and they were doing well. I think the mid-80s was very good over here. I maybe came here at a time that it went down a little bit, but, you know, we've worked at it, we've stayed at it. Probably didn't mean to stay as long as I did, but I met a good woman and she given me two good lads. So, you know, life is very good and we're very thankful for all the good things that are happening, and someday hopefully we can go back home.
Is she a saint of a woman to put up with you? Is she into football?
She's into football. She'd have to be into it. But she was always interested, you know. Mm. She probably didn't think she'd be as into it as when I met her in Holloway Road many years ago. But, you know, without her, I couldn't put in the effort that I did.
Sorry for getting in your way.
Don't do it again, Marty.
Yeah? No, I won't, I promise.
Taking a break from training is a man who happens to be from County Mayo. That's Tony Gohan. Tony, where exactly are you from in County Mayo?
I'd be from Kiltane in County Mayo.
What will this mean to you if you win this Connacht Championship medal?
Oh, it'd be massive. Absolutely massive. You know, I never thought that I'd be playing in the Connacht final after leaving Mayo or whatever. So it'd be just a huge occasion.
I'm sure they'll have bonfires in Kiltane if you win this one.
Oh, I don't know. Some may be a bit divided, but you'd like to think so, maybe.
Kiltane native and London footballer Tony Gohan heard on Countrywide with Marty Morrissey, produced by Sinead Egan. And despite Marty's best efforts, London Mayor Boris Johnson will not be there when the match kicks off at 2 o'clock tomorrow, but there will be regular updates on Sunday Sport here on RTE Radio 1.
Playback on RTE Radio 1 with Marion Richardson.
The Pat Kenny Show broadcast live from the Galway Arts Festival last Monday. 190 events over a fortnight, from theatre to music to street spectaculars. Pat asked Chief Executive John Crumlish and Artistic Director Paul Fahey about the economic benefit to the city.
The impact, John, of the festival economically on the city. I mean, you have a series of things. You've got the Film Fla, the Arts Festival, then the Galway Races. It's just endless. That's the only word for it.
And if you talk to hoteliers, the spin on goes on that the PR of those events really kick through right until September. Our economic impact is approximately 17.5 million, and we would hope to repeat that this year again. And the thing about it is it's spread over 2 weeks. It's not all, you know, in two or three days where it's hell for leather. So businesses like us from that point of view.
I'm sure they do. I mean, last night on the streets of Galway, it was just incredible. It was like being in a Mediterranean city. It was fantastic.
A great atmosphere.
Yeah.
And well, that's the direct economic impact, Pat, on the 17.5 million in the 2 weeks. It's very hard to kind of quantify what the festival impact is worth financially in the other 50 weeks of the year, because it's so associated with Galway. So we hit all the fabrics of society, culturally, socially, economically, we like to think anyway.
Paul Fahey and John Crumlish. Singer-songwriter Julie Feeney was another of Pat's guests, and she sang live, accompanied by Cormac DeBarra, on harp and harmonies, her own song, Dear John.
Dear John, I wrote this song for you. I want to do right by you. I want to make you shine. Dear John, I read between the lines for you. You protected the future, you had pride. Many of the miracles done were golden, innocence precious, wise and golden. Oh, 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 wondering what it's gonna be like. Everything is relative, looking through the keyhole, kaleidoscope twisting. Who tells a story then? Wondering what it's gonna be like. What a fantastic day, a marvelous wonder. What a great day, what a fantastic day. Hey, what a great day, what a fantastic day, a marvelous wonder. What a great day, what a fantastic day. Hey, what a great day, waiting on a moonlit night. Oh, waiting on a moonlit night. Oh, oh, waiting on a moonlit night. Oh, oh, waiting on a moonlit night. Oh, oh.
Julie Feeney and Cormac DeBarra live from Galway. Morning Ireland reporter Samantha Lebrary has also been on the road this week, visiting gathering celebrations in Limerick, Kerry and Roscommon. Her final stop was Thunlera in County Dublin on Thursday, where the coastal gathering cruise was about to set sail. Between now and the 1st of August, 50 boats will travel along the coast, stopping in places like Arklow, Dunmore East, Kinsale, before a final rally in Dingle. Well, Gail McAllister of the Irish Sailing Association told Samantha that the legacy of the gathering is already apparent.
Many, many sailors have said already, are you doing it again next year? Some are saying, I can't make it this year, can we do it again? So there's no question there will be more international invitations to come and join cruises year after year.
And although the sun is shining here in Dunleary today, there's only just a few clouds in the sky. There is one little problem with the weather here for the sailors. What is that?
No wind. So we're going to be, as they say in Kerry, shocking diesel, I think, along the coastlines. But a lot of them seem to be fairly philosophical about that. But a lot of the skippers and the crew are saying just, hey, at least it's not stormy. We're going to get there and we're going to have a fantastic time along the way.
And John Concannon of Fáilte Ireland was also in Dunleary as the crews set sail.
John, we visited four different gatherings around the country this week, and the one thing that struck me about them is their size. They aren't large-scale events attracting hordes of people, so are they working?
They certainly are. I mean, you're seeing a huge number of community projects, community gatherings happening. And, you know, when we put the idea in Fáilte Ireland together first a few years back, we said, OK, well, let's come up with some big flagship events like New Year's Eve, St. Patrick's Day, to get national and international media attention. And then we'd ask, secondly, is the existing events, like the Galway Arts Festival, which is on this week, to programme the gathering, that'd give us a programme of activity to happen. But the big new thing was, let's go out to counties around the country and ask communities to come up with ideas for gatherings, be that family, college, school, and ask them, you know, to celebrate what's great about themselves. So we thought, okay, 26 counties, maybe 10 new events per county would be good. That'd be 260 new events. And then we said, okay, get like an ambitious, make that 500 events. And that'd be all new stuff happening. Now, last week we passed new events, 4,600 new events happening around the country. So there's been a huge outpouring of community energy, community activation. So yes, they are small. And like as we heard this week, for example, in Listowel, 20 people coming, they're going to spend, you know, between 500 and 1,000 euro in their community. And it's not just the economic impact, it's the tie, the connections that are coming back together. So lots and lots of people. It's almost like a democratization of tourism where people are coming up with ideas, inviting their friends, inviting their family. So it's been absolutely fantastic.
John Concannon of Fáilte Ireland describing the lovely warm side of community life in Ireland. Valerie Cox's story from Raphoe in County Donegal was chilling though. Sisters Isa and Susie Arthur have lived in a farmhouse at Fedyglass all their lives. Isa is 91 and Susie is 89. 2 weeks ago, Isa was working in her garden when a car drove into the farmyard with three men in it. She thought she'd hunted them away, but they came back.
So he sneaked in while you were out gardening. He sneaked in behind your back.
Oh, then I got Susie lying on the floor shouting, "He's left me." I made a dash up the hall. And as I went into the hall, he came out of this room and he pushed me down. And I started shouting, "Get me the gun, quick." And as that other boy came flying down the stairs and out to the kitchen and pulled all the wires out of the telephone and out of the door, locking me in.
Was Susie hurt?
She never wasn't able to get up and I hadn't time to stop her.
What had they done to Susie?
Pulled her off the chair she was sitting on. All this stuff was pulled out, lying in the middle of the floor, and she couldn't get up. And here was me sitting, and no, can I get out? But there's a key in the hall door. I run and I got hit. And I went down. By this time, I'd lost my shoes. And I had to go down the lane in my stockings. Me in the middle of the road, and all the cars come, me tried to flag people down. I think they must have thought I was got off my head or something.
So somebody stopped?
Two girls. But the two girls come on with me. They got the key lying outside the back door. Susie was hurt. She's badly hurt yet. She's pinching her hips. Those girls, they rang Joe and rang the doctor and the ambulance and all. And I often think that, oh, she had those girls, that I could thank them for what they'd done for me. If it hadn't been for them that day, I would meet.
So how do you feel now, Isa?
I would like to see him given but a good bit of punishment as well as that. Because seven that the jail's no half cruel enough for them.
And what sort of people would do that to two elderly women?
Young blackguards, just couldn't call them nothing else. But the older boy in the car, I maintain he was the ringleader.
Isa, did they steal very much?
They didn't get anything. There was nothing for them.
This is your china cabinet and this is where they smashed the glass.
That's where they smashed the glass on it.
Isa, are you worried now about living here? How do you feel about living here?
Oh, I'm going to stick it. I'm a fighter. I'm not going to be shuffed for those blaggers. Spent all my life here. My daddy and mammy, my sisters. They're all dead, only Susie and me. That's the family wiped out. But I'm not going to shift.
She's a warrior, all right. 91-year-old Isa Arthur with Valerie Cox, heard on the Today Show. Well, if you look to the skies over Bray, County Wicklow tomorrow, you'll see the annual Air Spectacular, which will feature, among others, Jerry Humphreys, known as the Flying Farmer, and William Hillock, who'll be making his debut flying a Slingsby Firefly. They spoke with Petula Martin.
It began 4 years ago. I got a gift voucher for my 40th birthday on 26th of May. My good wife bought it for me, and she bought me a half-hour try lesson. I availed of the lesson, absolutely loved it. Slowly, slowly, I'm getting there, but yeah, I want to be top aerobatic pilot one day, so that's my ambition.
What's your favourite manoeuvre so far?
I like flying inverted, which would be upside down.
Smoke is on, and we're pulling about 3G now. All the time you have to be very careful that you position the manoeuvres relative to the crowd. So in Bray, it's a little bit more difficult than Bray because you're over the sea, so you don't have all these nice lines telling you where you are. So all the time you've got to position yourself by looking at Bray Head and the town and the crowd, and the Ferris wheel is the centre of the display in Bray.
Petula Martin reporting for Morning Ireland. Well, life has been busy and exciting for Munster rugby player Paul O'Connell. He's just back from the Lions tour of Australia, and soon he'll be getting married to his partner Emily. They've been together for a number of years and have a 3-year-old son, Paddy. Miriam wanted to know who popped the question.
I thought she'd never asked me, to be honest, Miriam. But yeah, it's great now. We're really looking forward to it. It's going to be a great few days.
But joking aside, did he get down on one knee?
We went for a picnic with Paddy, and I actually had a knee injury at the time, so I didn't get down on one knee, which is a bit of a regret, really, because everyone asked and subsequently did, and I said I didn't. But we went for a picnic in Currachase Woods, a nice woods near where we live, and Paddy was feeding the ducks, and it was a lovely day.
At the moment, for 3-year-old Paddy, there are two Paul O'Connells, his dad and the rugby player.
He's beginning to cop it a little bit now. When he watches a match and I'm on it, and if you asked him, is that dad, he'll say, that's not dad, that's Paul O'Connell. So he thinks the two were two different people, kind of. So he knows a little bit now, like, you know, anytime I'm leaving the house, he says, are you going rugby training, or are you going to a rugby match or whatever? So he gets it a little bit, but it's been great, actually. He's given me a lot of perspective in the last few years, because it's a lot easier to enjoy the rugby now, because I suppose you realise very quickly it's not the be-all and end-all, that Paddy and Emily and family are the be-all and end-all, really. And it's nice to come home, win, lose. I know it's a bit of a cliche, win, lose or draw, he doesn't care, but yeah, it is a fact he doesn't. And he just wants to play with you no matter what the result is and no matter what your form is. So it's
Did you
brilliant.
Throw a rugby ball at him?
A little bit.
Munster rugby star Paul O'Connell. Well, it's all go in Limerick since they won the Munster Hurling Championship last Sunday for the first time in 17 years. Limerick comedian John Kenny was in lyrical mood.
When you see the game of hurling, a kind of an ancient game, I was watching it yesterday, and you just say, the level of skill, the pace, the speed, it is probably, is not probably, the best field sport in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, the speed,
it's beautiful
the technique.
To look at, yeah.
We seem to take it for granted, and we seem to forget that these guys actually work for a living as well. And the level of skill and fitness, and I mean, hurling is just a treasured game. It is one of the most beautiful games. Thanks be to God, we still have it.
We're pretty competitive too. Was it sweeter, all the sweeter that you beat Cork?
Well, there's a saying down in Limerick, you know, when the hay is saved and Cork bait, what more do you have to do? And somebody was slagging me during the week because they said, I suppose you'll be having the dinner at 8:30, because that was one of the lines from a sketch we wrote years ago about the back of the church, about these two guys heading off to a match.
Okay.
Which was always sort of a big tradition thing like that, you know, the day of a Munster final. The cows would be milked at 5:30 in the morning, the breakfast would be had at 6:30, and then you'd have the dinner at 8:30, and you'd be on the road to the match. Of course, transport was very slow in those days, you know what I mean? It could have been bikes or push cars or whatever you had, but this kind of romantic idea, the Munster final has a huge tradition. Limerick, you're my lady, you're Shannon Waters, tears. I'm crying myself.
No, keep going.
No, don't put anyone after breakfast now, it's over the morning, me.
John Kenny with Miriam O'Callaghan.
Playback on RTE Radio 1 with Marion Richardson.
Visceral and animalistic were the words used by Assistant Chief Constable Will Kerr to describe the rioting crowds they had to face down after the Orange March through Ardoyne in Belfast wasn't allowed return by the same route. That was on foot of a ruling by the Parades Commission, and it plunged North Belfast into a familiar chaos. The Reverend Norman Hamilton, moderator of Ballysillan Presbyterian Church, has lived in North Belfast with his family for over 25 years, and he spoke with Philip Boucher-Hayes on Drive Time.
There is a massive issue of educational underachievement. There are massive issues about employment opportunities which are connected. There is no obvious dividend from the political peace process on the ground in many of these areas. There is no social uplift that has come to these areas, and therefore there's a sense of disillusionment. It is not just a matter of throwing money at them, but a matter of helping these communities and their leaders to say, we do have a future in this city. We do have a future as individual families and as individuals. How we do that, I think, is primarily an issue around the benefits of education. I was very struck by Michelle Obama at her speech in the waterfront, where she said that she had come and her husband had come from a poor family, but they were committed to education because they saw that as a way forward for themselves. And I think that message has to be embedded in some way in many of these communities that are so troubled.
If I was a young man living in one of these micro communities that you describe, though, would I find myself looking with envy over the community divide and saying, why do we not have what they have?
You might do that. You would be more likely to say, actually, we have nothing in our community, rather than being jealous of what is on the other side of the fence. Because actually, you don't see what's happening on the other side of the fence very much because the communities are so separate.
From Drive Time on Monday. I was listening to comedian A.B. Philbin Bowman on Thursday night's Arena, and he reminded us that the life expectancy of British comedy characters is shorter than that of Baltimore drug dealers in The Wire. Alan Partridge is the exception, of course, and with excitement building about his big screen debut, Alpha Papa, we had a chance to listen back to his best, worst moments.
Instead of giving Partridge a second series of his chat show, they thought it would be funnier to deny him the series and then follow his life as it spiralled downwards into the absurd and self-aggrandising foothills of very minor celebrity. In one typical scene, Alan attempts to impress a couple of big shots from Irish television, played by the real-life creators of Father Ted, Arthur Matthews and Graham Linehan.
Big fans of all the Irish stuff. Yep. I love your pop music. Enya and the other one, Ripped Up the Pope. Bald chap. And I think that's it.
Well, it's you too, of course.
Yeah, you well, yeah, oh, fantastic. Sunday, bloody Sunday. What a great... It encapsulates the frustration of a Sunday, doesn't it? Yeah. You wake up in the morning, you've got to read all the Sunday papers, the kids are running round, you've got to mow the lawn, wash the car, and you think, Sunday, bloody Sunday.
Steve Coogan, a.k.a. Alan Partridge, heard on A.B. Philbin Bowman's report for Arena. Well, we've often heard it said, I'm pulling my hair out. And for most people, it's just a colourful description of how we feel when we're exasperated. But on Mooney with Shay Byrne, we found out that for some people, that's what they literally do. Consultant psychologist Dr. David Carey.
Now, we do know a lot about it. It's called trichotillomania, after the Greek for hair pulling madness. It occurs most commonly in younger children and the pre-adolescent age range, but it can actually affect people of any ages. It's a very interesting condition, typically associated with obsessive-compulsive disorder, but it's not as simple as that, because there can be a certain automatic type of hair pulling. Usually it affects the hair on the head, eyebrows, and eyelashes. In some cases, it can affect other parts of bodily hair as well. Obviously, in children, it would be head, eyebrows, and eyelashes. It can be quite automatic, and people can't be aware that they're doing it.
Mary in Mayo says, I pulled my hair out in my 30s after I had my second child. I twisted it in a knot, then yank it out. I'd love to know why.
I'd like to know why, too, Mary, and I wish I had an answer for that. Shay, I'm surprised at the number of people that are texting in and identifying
based
with this.
On the fact that you see a lot of people every year and you've only seen five cases over
exactly.
A number of years.
Yeah.
This is obviously a much more widespread problem.
Right.
And there are health implications to eating the hair as well as the pulling of the hair out of the head. When you eat the hair, the stomach doesn't process it too well.
It doesn't process. It depends on, of course, how much you eat. If it's single hairs, it's not going to do a lot of damage. But if you're eating clumps of hair, you're likely to cause an obstruction. and it's not easily digested. So it's not a really good thing to do. Here again, you know, people are now texting in. This is an undercover kind of condition. People try to conceal it.
Yeah.
And then you put it on the radio, and suddenly, because they're anonymous now, they're texting in and saying, I'm doing this. That's, I think, the second person that's texted in saying it's been 20 years since they're doing it.
So they're adults.
That's a long time living with a condition and being ashamed of it.
From the Shay Byrne Show. Well, time was when off on our holidays we made sure to visit the local tobacconist or off-license to get cheaper goodies to bring home. But according to Liveline callers, there are much better bargains to be had at the pharmacy, even if you're only hopping across the border, like Damien from County Louth.
We're paying at the moment €103 per month for the medicine that she requires for her treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And I priced it. I rang Boots this morning based on a couple of discussions I had with various people and started kicking myself that I haven't done this ages ago. And the lady came back and said, yeah, just went through the whole prescription and said, that'll be £22. I said, what? Oh, is that a bit cheaper? And I said, you won't believe how cheap it is. So that's about €27. So in a year, it costs us €900. I'm just disgusted by it. Like, you know, the fact that we've had to spend this money for the last number of years, which we won't be spending going forward.
And you're only copping this on now.
Yeah.
So €900 per year on a monthly prescription fee of €103.
Correct.
And that's what you're going to save.
Correct.
Wow.
Like, it's frightening, isn't it? And like, I nearly think there's a business in this for somebody to actually start getting people's prescriptions and going up the north. It was Boots in the Irish Republic versus Boots in Uri. And Boots in Uri, when I rang them, she says, oh, you're another person ringing looking for this.
Anne is in Dublin. Good afternoon, Anne. Go ahead. Your daughter's 18.
My point is, it's much the same as that month. Why are we paying it? Like, and what he said about cancer drug, my daughter has Crohn's disease and she takes a drug that costs us €96 here in Ireland. We can get it for €6.50 in the Canaries, and it's actually, when we buy it in the Canaries, it was made in Ireland. Like, why? And it's €3 in Turkey.
€3 in Turkey?
Yeah, €6 in the Canaries. And we walk into Turkey with no prescription, just the box, and we can purchase 7 boxes of it at a go.
Like, how many times are we told in this country that, like, you know, the cost of everything is more expensive because of transport costs and insurance costs and rates and everything else?
Mm-hmm.
And yet then the drug is sent out to the Canaries and it's cheaper.
Yeah. It just doesn't make sense.
Sean is there in County Clare. Good afternoon, Sean.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Your point on this.
I was in Spain several weeks ago and I forgot my medication. And my medication already costs around 29 to 30 euros here in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it over the counter without prescription for €10.20 in Spain.
Exact same tablet?
Same tablet, same thing. You never get an explanation. You know, I think the minister, basically, the Minister for Health, he needs to explain, right, how it can be done.
From Liveline with Damien O'Reilly. Well, this fine weather is enough to make us all D-Mob happy. And that was certainly the atmosphere when the Dáil rose on Thursday for its summer holidays. The Troika has also left town, so yippee for now anyway. Writer John McKenna captured that carefree, hazy, lazy days of summer feeling on Sunday Miscellany.
Was there ever a taste that spoke more eloquently or earthily of summer than that of sorrel? I'm not talking about the garden variety, but the wild sorrel plant that was the slaker of thirsts in the sun-drenched fields of childhood. And thirst was a constant companion in those days. No cans or plastic bottles to drink from, no sachets of fruit juice. Just a good swallow of water before you left home. There were a few mothers who insisted that their offspring brought milk or brown sauce bottles of water with paper stoppers, just in case. But inevitably, the bottles were stored under a bush or in the long grass for collection on our return from the wilds beyond the village. Setting off from home on an adventure meant leaving at 9 in the morning and heading back when the 6 o'clock Angelus bell tolled across the parish, calling us to prayer and, more importantly, to food. Provisions were few. There might be half a flash bar, a melted trigger bar, or a furry lump of toffee unearthed from the depth of someone's pocket. But these would be gone by the time the fence at the garden's end had been climbed. What we did have was a solid faith in the earth, a belief that it, like the Lord, would provide in times of need. Never mind that the stolen apples were stone hard, that the carrots foraged from the long back gardens of rural cottages were pencil thin. Never mind that a potato stalk would provide only small spuds for roasting over the open fire. That the waters of the River Lur were uncertain, depending on where you drank along its course. It was the sorrel that tasted of summer, and it still does.
Writer John McKenna, heard on Sunday Miscellany, produced by Clinany Onloon. Well, stay tuned for George Lee on The Business, but I leave you now with the song I heard, On the South Wind Blows, with Philip King last Sunday night. Gurumagov as were goluther, thusulam gurwanship salt as a glor, agus gameshivlam taka na McKenna, and tachthin chahogin, idrandalin, bantanivas and green, agus gajeship slan.
Did a cannonball this summer I